interaction with my new Palestinian Christian friends has been intense, but excellent.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, welcome to today's Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown coming your way again from Bethlehem. I actually based Jala right outside of Bethlehem. I've got the last day for me here at the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference, highly controversial conference that I have blasted in the past as being anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, to the point of even being anti-Semitic. And having been here, I would say that my worst concerns in terms of what is promoted at the conference have been exceeded. Things are worse in terms of what's being presented and the information that's being given to people and the degree of an association with Palestinian nationalism and Palestinian leadership way beyond what I was hoping would be the case. So the positions being espoused here are far worse than I was expecting. The people are far warmer than I was expecting. I was expecting to be greeted in a Christian way. I was expecting civil Christian interaction and open Christian interaction with the local believers here. It has been far more than that. It has been far deeper. There has been real heartfelt exchange. I had a great time with young people yesterday, ranging from 18 to mid-30s. I would say the bulk maybe being in mid to late 20s. And I asked them, please be honest with me. Please speak candidly to me. And I'll do the same with you. And I assure you, when you speak to me, you make your point. Now, I may push back. I may question what you're saying so I can clarify and understand. But I'm going to take what you're saying and chew on it. I'm going to take what you're saying and think about it. I'm going to take what you're saying and pray about it. So I've had leaders come up to me and say, did you feel welcome here by us? I said, yes. I don't like this. I don't agree with this. I'm concerned about this. But yes, yes, yes. We've hugged. It has been warm. It has been gracious. Considering the strong challenge that I brought yesterday, I have been embraced as warmly as I could ask to be embraced. And they hear my heart for them as well. And it's my daily prayer, God, show me my blind spots. Show me what I'm missing. Help me to understand. And they're saying, listen, you're giving us things to think about as well. That being said, the positions being espoused, the constant battering of any position that believes that God has brought the Jewish people back to the land, the disfigured way in which that is being presented, it grieves me deeply. So in short, the people are even warmer than I expected. Their positions are even worse than I expected. And it's based on that, that we are fellowshipping, that we are interacting, that we're praying. And by God's grace, I want to continue this. This was just the beginning in coming here to this conference. Now, before I talk to you about some of the interaction, and then I want to share with you an article that's been written, very intense article written about my talk yesterday and the response from the main conference leader yesterday to my talk. Before I get into that, let me lay out a principle for you that's very important in doing good apologetics or even dealing with conflict in general. I've shared this before, but I think many of you will be hearing this for the first time. So I have two very simple principles. Two very simple principles when it comes to doing effective apologetics. You can build 100 on these, but these are the two foundations. Number one, before you can answer the objection, reply to the concern, address the doctrine, whatever it is that you're going to be replying to, interacting with, you have to rightly understand what's being said. I might say, I believe in A, and you'll say, well, I don't agree with B. Well, I didn't say B, I said A. Many times that happens. Many times we misunderstand one another's arguments. Many times we misunderstand the emphasis the person is making or the point they're trying to make. And then we respond, and then they respond back, and we're dismissing each other. We're just reiterating our pet doctrines or pet peeves, and we're missing each other. I've seen it happen. You ever see it happen with social media? Or two people talking, they're in an argument. It's like, wait, time out. You're talking past each other, not to each other. All right? So we often do that. We often do that when it comes to issues of disagreement. But sometimes we do it innocently, even when we're just trying to respond to someone's question. It's happened with me on the radio, and some of you have heard it happen. You call in, Dr. Brown, I've been really wondering about this passage of Scripture, and I have a question, and I'm trying to understand how this fits with these other verses. And I say, got it. Great. Thank you. And you're a very polite person, so you don't say, well, I didn't finish the question. I think I've got the whole question, but you didn't finish it yet. And because you're so polite, you just let me go on and speak. And it's one of those days where I think, you know, I'm going to give a really full answer. I'm going to take extra time with this call, and I'm going to give a really full answer. So I go on for like 4 or 5 minutes while you sit there listening politely. And then I'll say, thinking, man, I really did a good job answering your question. I'll say, so does that answer the question? And you'll say, well, no, not see, what I was really asking was this. And I think, oh, gosh, I misunderstood the question. So sometimes we misunderstand what a Jehovah's Witness believes, or what a Mormon believes, or what a Muslim believes. Or we misunderstand what a gay activist is saying. We misunderstand what the Democratic candidate is saying, or what the Republican candidate is saying, or what our spouse is saying, or what our colleague at work is saying. We just miss each other. And because we don't rightly understand what the other one is saying, we can't rightly respond to it. So the simple way, a friend of mine suggested this many years ago, the simple way to avoid this is when you give me your objection or problem or issue. Mike, I've got to take issue with this. I don't agree with your position for this reason. Now, I restate your position back to you in my words. Don't do it in the same words, because maybe you don't get the words, maybe you don't understand it. You can repeat it, but you don't understand it, right? What you want to do is you want to give it back in your own words. Okay, so you're saying that you feel that there's injustice towards your cause and that people on my side are blind to it because we've never lived in your shoes. Is that what you're saying? Yes. Ah, okay, good. Now I can respond. And can I suggest husbands, wives, others in relationship, good friends, okay, parents, children, you know, older children, you're interacting on a certain level, that it's really good to even do that, to say, Mom, am I understanding right that you're upset with me because you perceive that that I dishonored you the other day the way I responded? Yeah, that's why I'm upset. Oh, okay. No, I would never do that. I was trying to do this, and it came up. Now I see why you're upset. And then Mom's like, oh, now, okay, now you see why I'm upset, and now I understand why you did that, and I misunderstood it. You'd be amazed with husbands and wives. Rather than, you're mad at me, I'm going to be mad at you. You're upset, I'm going to be more upset. Instead to say, all right, honey, am I right in understanding that you're upset with me because you think this, this, this? Yes. Oh, okay, I didn't see that. So, big principle, but real simple one. Now, second principle, and this is the hard one. This is the costly one. This is the difficult one. You can't adequately respond to the objection unless you feel the weight of the objection. You can't adequately respond to the objection unless you feel the weight of the objection. Now, let me explain that. I'm sitting here with Palestinian Christians. I have not lived in their shoes. I can't relate to what it's like to live in their shoes because I've never been in a similar position. I can't relate to what it would feel like to be a slave. I can't relate to what it would feel like to be taken off and put in a concentration camp. I can't relate to what it would feel to think that I'm trapped in the wrong body. I can't relate to lots of things because it's completely outside my life experience. So what I've sought to do when I seriously engage a subject is to do my best to get into the shoes of those I differ with. Now, you can only go so far because you still haven't lived it yourself, but you pray and you ask God for insight, and then you listen and you digest and you take things in. Here, I've never lost a child, all right? Some of you have. I can think about what it would be like. I can imagine it. I can let the emotions play out. I lost a child. I don't know what that would feel like. Here, I'm not a mother. I'll never be a mother. I don't know what a miscarriage feels like. I don't know what it feels like to find out I'm pregnant because I'm not a woman, all right? So what you can do, though, is do your best to empathize. Now, how do you do that? You listen to what the other person is saying. You digest it. You do your best to take it in. You meditate on it to try to see the world through those eyes. And then you immerse yourself in other people saying the same thing. For example, I didn't grow up in a traditional Jewish home, so I'm Jewish. I can relate to a lot of what it means to be Jewish, how it feels to be Jewish, but I can't fully relate to what it means to be a traditional Jew because I wasn't raised in a traditional Jewish home. So I can't fully relate to spirituality from a Jewish perspective. I can partially, but what I've done over the years is immersed myself in Jewish literature. Sat and spent hours and hours and hours with devout rabbis, dialogued, interacted, and done my best to see the spiritual search, to see how God is related to, how one feels to be having this special calling and destiny as a Jewish person, as a child of the nation of Israel, and on and on. And because of that, I can articulate many Jewish positions in far greater depth than my own background and experience. The same when it came to LGBT activism. God burdened me about the issues, resist the agenda, but then he broke my heart for the people. And he did that by me sitting and listening, talking to people, having meals and telling them, tell me your story, and then reading book after book and story after story from their perspective. To the point I'd sometimes put a book down and get alone in my room and weep and say, God, I don't want to hurt these people. I want to help. And I know my position is going to feel hateful to them. God, break my heart. And, of course, I can't relate to walking in their shoes fully, but I have much more empathy, and that compassion comes through. Okay.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Joining us on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown, my last day here in Bethlehem, Beit Jala, guggling, heading back to the States on Thursday, and then meeting with Jewish believers, leaders in the Messianic movement on Friday, and back home Saturday, where I'm home for until Thursday night, where I go to Italy. So I'm not sure if I want to try to get on normal sleep patterns back in the States, because Italy and Israel are, I believe, both 7 hours different from East Coast time. So we shall see. Maybe I'll just be up half the day and sleeping at odd times, but alert and alive and ready for radio. In fact, so exciting. A week from tonight, we launch our Real Messiah Outreach broadcast for Greater New York and for the world. But everyone in Greater New York can hear that blanket in New York City, into New Jersey, into Western Long Island. Yeah, so a massive Jewish population base there that we get to reach with the Real Messiah broadcast. And God willing, we'll be putting it on live stream as well, so you'll be able to watch. But this is going to be educational for you. If you've got a Jewish friend, or if you're listening, if you're a Jewish listener, please be sure to catch the broadcast and tell your friends in New York. All right, so simple apologetic principles, simple principles for doing effective of having effective interaction with others with whom you differ. Number one, make sure you rightly understand the issue, the problem, what's being presented. Number two, you must feel the weight of the problem, feel the weight of the issue before you can adequately address it. Let's say, for example, you have never suffered severe pain in your life for whatever reason. You've never had a migraine. You've never had a kidney stone. You've never given birth to a child. You've never gotten some severe injury where you're in agony. You've never had cancer with the agony it brings. You've never had any of that, okay? And someone is there, they can't function at work. They've got a migraine headache, and you're like, hey, well, let's take a walk. Or it's like, it's not going to work. You know, it's like, hey, let me just pray for you. You put your hand on the person's head, they're feeling like their head's going to explode. But you have no sensitivity because you've never experienced it. Well, let's say someone calls you sobbing. It's your best friend. You get a phone call. It's midnight. You wake up and hear them sobbing on the phone, and you've never lost a loved one. You've never had a tragedy close to you ever. And they're sobbing. Their family's just killed in a car wreck. They somehow survived, but they're killed in a car wreck. And you're like, oh, and they're sobbing. Oh, I don't know what to do. What am I going to do? And you say, praise the Lord, Romans 8:28, God works all things for the good. It's going to be all right. Well, even if every word you said was ultimately true, that's not what they need to hear then. But maybe you're so extremely insensitive. I mean, that's a bad insensitivity. Yeah, I mean, that's horrifically bad insensitivity. But let's just say you're so insensitive that you don't understand the words you spoke are not the right words then. At that moment, you say, where are you? All right, I'm on my way. Here, you want to talk on the phone as I go? Hey, tell me what happened. I love you. I'm praying. I love you. We're going to make this. We're going to get through this. And you just go there and you hold that person in your arms and you cry together. And it may be weeks or months before you get to Romans 8:28 in a way that really is going to help that situation. So here I am with Palestinian Christians. I met with young people yesterday, and one of them said to me, listen, you want us to renounce Palestinian terrorism, but remember, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And he begins to give history on different things and explain different conflicts. And he said, look, there was a woman suicide bomber. He said, and you mentioned the situation. And he said, was she, you know, a terrorist? He goes, well, here's what happened. During a conflict, Israelis bombed the home where she was. I don't have every detail exactly right. But her fiancé was killed and her parents were killed. She was left with nothing. And this was just her expression. And if they had better weapons and if they had fighter planes, that's what they'd be using. They wouldn't blow themselves up, you know. So Israel's engaging in what it's doing. You're calling it, you know, self-defense. And here these people are just, they've lost everything. And he went on. He said, look, a friend of mine was shot in the neck by an Israeli sniper. He said he'd broken the curfew at night to get bread and he got shot in the neck. And he said, these are things that happen. And he went on, and I said to him, do you think there's a syllable you said there, aside from specific names and details, that I haven't been aware of for years? Do you think there's anything you said that I wasn't fully aware of? Do you think I couldn't have made the case for why the terrorist blew herself up and that she wasn't really a terrorist after all? And this was her only way of fighting back against the evil of Israel. And that I couldn't stand up and make your case. You don't think I've thought about all of these issues for a long period of time? And he thought, okay, well, maybe you have. That being said, I am here to present what God gave me to present as clearly and forcefully and lovingly as I can, on the one hand. And on the other hand, to listen as attentively as I can, to hear as attentively as I can, to drink in what they're saying from one person after another after another. I don't think I'm hearing anything new. I was aware of restrictions that these Palestinians live under. I was aware of issues that they face. I've gotten a few more details since I've been here, but I don't think there's anything new that I've heard. I heard about the situation in Hebron. Going back there, going there and being in the middle of it was enlightening, eye-opening, to be there physically, to see it with your own eyes, but to say it was new, no. But I want to drink in everything I can. I want to be impacted in every way I can. I want to feel their frustration. I want to feel their indignation. I want to feel their concern. I want to feel their sense of being abandoned. I want to feel what it's like to be in their shoes, even though I understand I can't fully, because I've never lived in this. All right? And again, you can only listen and absorb and then pray. And then having done that, then I do my best to understand, okay, well, what would Israel say to this? What would Israel say in terms of, well, why these restrictions? Are you trying to hurt the people? Are you trying to crush the people? What's your excuse for this? What's the reason for this? Couldn't you have found a better way? And then having absorbed what I can from both positions, then I do my best to advocate for what's right. And look, I am 100% sure, scripturally and historically, that God brought our people back to the land, that this is not some random event that just happened. And I'm not saying this is a Calvinist believing that everything that happened, happened by the will of God. In other words, Barack Obama was elected by the will of God. Donald Trump was elected by the will of God because God sets up kings, removes kings, and he does the same with the democracy. So if the Jewish people are back in the land, God brought them back in the land. I'm not saying this as a Calvinist, all right? I'm saying that, believing that scripturally to be the case, based on scripture and my understanding that if God scattered us in his anger, no one could regather us. But that doesn't mean Israel has the right to do anything unjust. That doesn't mean Israel has the right to oppress a single Palestinian. That doesn't mean Israel has the right to put hardships on people or restrict travel. Now, you might say, well, they don't want to do that, but it's because of terrorist leadership, or it's because of Islamic leadership. It's because of lack of cooperation. For example, Palestinian leaders here were talking about issues of water shortage, and that Israel gets a certain quota in the settlements, they get a certain quota, but they get less where they live. Now, I've heard that repeatedly. I've heard that for some years. I was reading a detailed response by an Israeli leader saying, or someone who had researched it and was getting the information and saying, Israel has designated X amount of money that has been given to the Palestinian Authority for the digging of additional wells for the people. And instead, the money gets spent on other things or misused or ends up in some rich leader's mansion somewhere. Now, I don't know the truth about this. I have to look into it. However, I feel for my Palestinian Christian friends that they feel deprived and they feel forsaken. They feel misunderstood, abandoned by evangelicals in the West. I feel that weight. And as I talked to the young people yesterday, you know, some were saying, look, you're hearing us, but you're not really listening. You're listening, but you're not really hearing. You're not absorbing what you're saying. I said, I'm trying. I'm doing my best. And I'm processing. But keep coming at me. And they said, look, you're giving us things to think about. And we said, all right, look, let's be candid. Come on. And they say something, and I'd respond. And, you know, one of them said, look, in your whole speech, you said, I'll help you if you do this. I'll help you if you do that. I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. I was talking to this particular gentleman out of beard. I said, let's say I have a job agency. And there's a great job, but they have a policy, no beards. No beards. So I'm telling you, I can get you this job, but only if you shave your beard. If you don't shave your beard, I can't get you that job. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you are perceived a certain way, I can't help you as much as I'd like to help you. I said, if you're in the States, come on my radio show and share your perspective. I'll give you a platform to do that in a heartbeat. You don't have to jump through any hoops. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to do anything. Just, you can be on my show. Come on the show. Give your perspective. Even if I differ with you, I'll let you get your perspective out. But if others are to affirm what you're saying or recognize the validity of what you're saying, you have to understand certain ways when you speak how it comes across. And I'm trying to help you. So this is the kind of interaction. Iron sharpening iron, each one learning. But we've got to humble ourselves. Listen, I'm doing my best. Others are as well. May God help us come to his heart and mind.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming your way from Beit Jala, right outside of Bethlehem. A little bit later today, I'm scheduled to have a mini debate with Dr. Munter Isaac on the subject of replacement theology. And then that will be followed by extensive Q&A from the audience, and then we repeat that. So, God willing, I'll give you an update on that on tomorrow's broadcast on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and that's also a travel day for me, so hopefully you'll be able to get everything done, get on the plane, get back to the States, and then Friday, just interestingly, after this whole trip in Israel, I fly back to be with some dear friends, Messianic Jewish leaders from Israel and different nations. So, let me dive into a very important article about my presentation yesterday and a response to it. I think you're going to find this very eye-opening. We're talking about the controversial Christ at the Checkpoint Conference. So again, coming into this conference, I knew I would be the lone voice advocating my position. That's why I was asked to come. Having been here, I see all the more reason that it was important that I was here. That being said, I think the most important ways to move forward are going to be behind closed doors with people sitting and talking face to face. But I want to share with you an article that Dexter Van Zyl wrote. He has excellent articles on camera.org. Camera.org is a website devoted to exposing inaccuracy in the media, misreporting. It may deal with textbooks that misreport on Israel. It may deal with how the New York Times reported on something and gave a misleading impression. It's an important website I've used for years and really appreciated Dexter's articles. And when he saw I was scheduled to speak here, he wrote a critical article about me and why it was a mistake and why it's been a mistake for other Messianic Jews to come and speak here. And I really love what he does. I feel his work is very important, very sharp, very clear. And because of that, I thought, okay, well, let's just see what happens after my talk. So I want to share this with you. And it's called Michael Brown Exposes Double Standard at Christ at the Checkpoint. We posted a link to it on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page and tweeted it out as well. Now, this is a very intense article. I'm just warning you up front. He says, every 2 years, the ritual is repeated. The organizers of the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference, a so-called peacemaking conference held every even-numbered year at the Orient Palace Hotel in Beit Jala, invite a Messianic Jew to defend Israel before an audience of evangelical Christians, some of whom have come to the West Bank to hear and relate stories of Jews behaving badly, and then use these stories to feed an unwholesome bitterness toward Israel. Unfortunately, I agree with that assessment in terms of what happens to people who come. He said, the invitation is given by conference organizers from the Bethlehem Bible College, an evangelical college in Beit Jala, to demonstrate that they're willing to listen to people who disagree with them. It's not as if the organizers really want to hear or acknowledge what he has to say, but instead hope to deploy the Messianic Jew as a prop to lend credibility to their anti-Zionist narrative. Now, that's Dexter's perspective and the perspective of many critics of the conference. I believe it's genuinely important to them to bring in an opposing perspective. That is an ethic and a value that they have, that they want to be sure that they bring in an opposing perspective, and they'll often say they've not seen this done, say, at a Zionist conference, at a pro-Israel conference, that you bring in someone from the opposite perspective to give their point of view. I appreciate that. I honor that. I don't feel like I have been used as a prop to lend credibility to the narrative. However, I absolutely understand how it can appear like that to others, all right? So I'm interacting honestly with this article by Dexter, whose work I deeply appreciate. He said it's an obvious setup, but the Messianic Jew who desperately wants to be taken seriously as a believer in Jesus and as a Jew who loves Israel, says yes. He knows full well other speakers at the conference will do everything they can to counteract the defense of Israel, but the invitee concludes that if he says he agrees to speak, no one will, if he doesn't agree to speak, looks like a typo there, no one will speak on Israel's behalf at the conference. So, yeah, it's a valid issue. Let me bring my voice and let my voice be heard. At least there's one voice. If there are 20 voices saying yes and one voice that says no, at least it's one voice saying no. If there are 20 voices saying no and one voice says yes, at least it's that one voice. So, yes, that's why many would come. And for me, when I'm asked to bring my disagreement openly, then, of course, to be challenged and to challenge, of course I'll do that. So Dexter says, during his talk, the Jewish believer in Jesus acknowledges that the Palestinians are suffering, laments the suffering, then offers an apologia of Israel's efforts to defend itself, most notably the security barrier and the checkpoint. Everyone applauds his sincerity and for a few moments expresses sympathy for the Israelis. But by the time the conference is over, the Messianic Jews' presence at the Christ at the Checkpoint conference has been forgotten, or worse, used to remind evangelicals in attendance that Israel is the sovereign state of the people who have rejected Jesus. The message implicit in the talk is that if only more Jews in Israel accepted Jesus as their Messiah, like that guy on stage, the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians would have ended years ago. So this is Dexter's concern, and a lot of my Messianic Jewish friends, I shouldn't say a lot, only a few have spoken at this, they have come under criticism from other Messianic Jews, especially in Israel. And there were Messianic Jewish believers who were very critical of me coming and urged me not to. Most said, hey, you do what you feel is right to do. Some said, Mike, we think it's wonderful you're going. And some said, don't go. Don't do it. So I did not want to dishonor my brothers or make it like, well, I know better. I'm going to do better. And my friends that went are glad they went. I've interacted with three of my Messianic Jewish colleagues who have gone, and they were all glad that they went and felt long-term it was good. Others said, no, it didn't do any good. It didn't do any good. They were the token voice there, and it served no purpose. So that was Dexter's concern, that was what was going to happen with me. He writes this, but that's not how it happened during this year's Christ at the Checkpoint, not by a long shot. Instead of defending Israel's efforts to defending itself and leaving it at that, Michael Brown, a conservative radio host and a Jewish believer in Jesus, went on the offensive. Brown, who spoke at the conference on May 29, 2018, began by describing his problems with the conference. Quote, I've already been grieved by things I heard from leaders in private, comparing Israel to Hamas, vilifying Palestinian Christians who have a different perspective. Christ at the Checkpoint encouraging tours of the blatantly propagandistic walled-off hotel, which distorts the past and the present and accuses Israel of ethnic cleansing, Brown said. Brown didn't stop there. He challenged Palestinian Christians, especially the folks who organized Christ at the Checkpoint conference, to, quote, openly express your disagreements with the Palestinian Authority and Fatah and Hamas. Otherwise, the feeling is that you're in harmony with them. That's my quote. Dexter writes, it was a legitimate challenge, because as in years past, the first night of this year's conference, which continues until Friday, was dedicated to Palestinian Christians saying nice things about the Palestinian Authority leadership and allowing the Palestinian Authority to attack Israel. And this year, one Christian from outside the region, Bishop Ephraim Tendero, Secretary General of the World Evangelical Alliance, called Mahmoud Abbas a man of peace in this land. High praise for a man who complained about Jews desecrating the Temple Mount with their filthy feet a few years ago. Dexter writes, Brown didn't just chide CATC organizers for their apparent submission to the PA, Palestinian Authority. He called on conference organizers to condemn the tendency of Palestinian leaders to celebrate the murder of Israelis in terror attacks. He made this plea after recounting the details surrounding the murder of the Fogel family in 2011. Rabbi Yaakov Cohn, a neighbor who entered the house with their 12-year-old daughter who returned from a youth event to find her slaughtered family, told the YNET website that her 2-year-old brother was, quote, lying next to his bleeding parents, shaking them with his hands and trying to get them to wake up while crying. The sight in the house was shocking, Brown said. And I posted pictures. I put up pictures. The faces are blurred out, but horrific, horrific massacre. in cold blood of a family. Little baby or little child laying next to the father. On the bed and just horrific bloodshed. And I did this because Israel, in certain ways, is so dehumanized, and just these evil Israelis and soldiers at the checkpoint, the terrible things they do to us, that I felt it was very important. These Palestinians who have suffered, who do have hardship, who do have difficulties, whose plight is important to me, as I've sat and listened now for hours and will continue to listen and interact, and do my best to understand. Their situation is important to me. I wanted people to remember, hey, there's another side to the suffering here. Let's not forget this. And this is not an accident. This is not an accident. This is not Israel bombing Hamas in Gaza and there's a civilian killed. Israel hates when that happens. This is intentional slaughter. So today, I said, the families of the murders, Amjad Awad and Hakim Awad, receive regular payments from the PA as part of their pension. In fact, it is reported that PA payments to families of terrorists and prisoners amount to roughly 10% of the PA budget. And I made this plea. Will you join me today in renouncing this? Dexter Van Zyl writes, he also described, meaning me, how Israelis respond to the deaths of civilians at the hands of their government. When in 2002, Israeli forces killed Salah Shahadeh, who, according to one source, had direct involvement in attacks that killed 474 people and wounded 2,649 between July 1st and July 2002. I'll just make this short. What happened was, when Israel took him out, when they dropped a bomb in the house where he was, that bomb also killed his wife, his daughter, his assistant, plus 10 other civilians, including 7 children, the youngest less than 1 year old. 150 people were wounded. What happened was Israeli intelligence relied on bad information, as a result of which so many others were killed or wounded, since he alone was targeted. And as I stated, when word of this got out, there were national protests in Israel, including the rebellion of Air Force pilots who had been involved in previous bombing missions. The nation rose up to protest the shedding of innocent Palestinian blood, even in the process of killing a mass murderer. All right? So I called on the Palestinians to follow the example set by the Israelis and hold their leaders accountable. The least you could do, I said, as followers of Jesus, is stand with me in denouncing your government's celebration of terrorism. I understand you have challenges as a Christian minority in a Muslim society, but somehow your voices of dissent must be heard. That was my plea. That was my appeal. Join with me in making a public statement so that the world can know you don't stand with this, because otherwise, the way you celebrate the Palestinian government and the leadership and sing the praises of Mahmoud Abbas and all this, American evangelicals are not going to be sympathetic to your cause because you're associated with a murderous cause. That was my appeal. Stay right here. Be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, your friendly voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, coming to you from the front lines of ministry here in Israel today in Beit Jala, right outside of Bethlehem, at a Palestinian Christian conference. One that is really devoted to attacking, bashing, criticizing Christian Zionism, and calling on Christians to stand with Palestinian Christians in the midst of their suffering, and a conference that I have absolutely, categorically, deeply differed with talk after talk and position after position, and just as deeply sought to listen to those I differ with and understand their perspective and stand with them as brothers in the midst of our differences. So, in the conference, I gave a message, 3 points. I said, if I'm to help you effectively, you need to separate yourself from the murderous policies, the celebration of terrorism, and Palestinian Authority, Hamas, Fatah, number one. Number two, you've got to abandon all forms of replacement theology. Number three, you've got to really put Jesus in the center and cultivate love for the Jewish people in the midst of your differences with Israel. And I said, I'll help you however I can, but to be effective, people need to know you don't stand with your government in these ways. And they need to know you recognize God's hand on Israel. And they need to know that you really genuinely have love, because it's not expressed. Often we don't hear that through the conference overall. So it's not conditions. It's saying, in this way, I can help you. But of course, you have to come to your own conclusions and work these things through. So dextromanzile for camera.org. I posted a link to the article on Facebook and on Twitter. He wrote up a response after I spoke. He wasn't happy with my coming. He thought I was just going to be used and be like the token messianic Jew, etc. He ended up being very, very pleased with what happened and how it happened. And after I spoke, then the conference organizer, Winter Isaac, was going to speak. So I was sandwiched in between Dr. Gary Burge, a top New Testament scholar and a very, very strong replacement theologian. So obviously a brother in the Lord with whom I have deep theological differences. And then me, and then after me, Winter Isaac. And he asked for permission to respond to me after I spoke, take the first 10 minutes of his presentation to respond to me after I spoke. And I said, it's your conference, whatever you want to do. I didn't like the idea, but his conference. Afterwards, I told him, I don't like the way it happened at all. I think it was a bad idea. And I don't believe it helped his cause to do that. After I'm the one and only speaker in the entire conference who's going to bring these views in this way. And rather than respond to the appeal in a positive way, and that's what I thought he was going to do, actually. He basically dismissed what I had to say. So I didn't feel like it looked good or played out well in that regard. So Dexter wrote an article about this. So Dexter then says this. He says it was a powerful speech. In addition, challenging CATC organizers to confront Palestinian violence, Brown asked them to condemn replacement theology and to put Jesus at the center of the conflict and to demonstrate this action by expressing love for the Israeli people. This is a tough challenge because, as Brown declared, Christ at the Checkpoint is far better known for standing against Israel than standing against Hamas and for the Gazan Christians. I had that in my notes. I ran out of time and couldn't fully express that point, but that is in the PowerPoint they have and is in the notes that will be in a paper that they will publish afterward. A conference spokesperson, Reverend Dr. Munter Isaac, knew the challenge was coming, even had a copy of Brown's speech before it was given, and should have been able to provide an ironic and substantive response. That's what I was expecting, and that's why I said, sure, go ahead and respond, sir. Plus, it's your conference. Dexter writes, instead he reacted with shocking disdain for the issues Brown raised, saying he and his colleagues were, quote, tired of having to deal with the questions and issues Brown raised in his talk because, quote, they seem to place all the blame on us, the oppressed. Isaac went on to say that he too could talk about the suffering endured by his community and could show pictures of the victims of Israeli violence, but that he didn't want to get into a competition about who suffered more. He also declared that radical Jewish groups and politicians celebrate when Palestinians are killed as if there were an equivalence between the incitement in Palestinian and Israeli society when there isn't. Hamas and Palestinian Authority-run television station regularly demonize Jews, and the Palestinian Authority and the Jordanian government regularly allow for calls of incitement on the Temple Mount. Demonization of the other permeates Palestinian society in ways that it simply does not in Israel. Instead of confronting the problem of incitement and the celebration of murder by both the Palestinian Authority and Hamas to use anti-Semitism as a unifying political agenda, Isaac tried to change the subject, or Isaac, as his name would be in Arabic. Quote, the real question we should be asking as followers of Christ is what drives people to do these violent things. This is the real question you should be asking. The question you should be asking is how do we work together to address the systems and structures of injustice and oppression that create these violent actions of some Palestinians? How do we as followers of Christ come together in humbleness and deal with the causes and ideologies that exclude and demonize? Now I'm just going to jump in here and say, hey, time out. One thing I'm trying to do is show solidarity. One thing I'm trying to do is say let's work together to address injustice wherever it is. But hang on, the demonization of the Jews was here long before the modern state of Israel. Just look through Quranic literature, Islamic literature, and the history of anti-Semitism outside of Islam. Dexter writes, Isaac also complained about a double standard used to judge Palestinian violence. Why is every Israeli violence self-defense? Why is every Palestinian violence terrorism? How ironic that evangelical Christians that supported the war in Iraq and support a war in Iran condemn and criticize the Palestinian people for violent acts of certain groups among us. He also said that Christ at the Checkpoint has previously condemned all forms of violence, but it's just that people are not listening. Isaac, like many other CATC speakers, has repeatedly and regularly condemned Christian Zionism at conferences over the past decade, simply couldn't be bothered to repeat these previous condemnations of Palestinian violence. In his response, Isaac missed an opportunity to send a message to Israelis and Jews throughout the world that, yes, he and his fellow Palestinian Christians understand how frightening it is for them to see Palestinian leaders laud and reward the killers of Israeli women and children. Instead of acknowledging the obligation of his fellow Christians to speak truth to power in Palestinian society and not just condemn Israel, Isaac spoke in vague terms about systems and structures that cause people to engage in acts of terror, as if the concept of sin, which CAT speakers use so often to condemn Israel, should not be used to assess Palestinian behavior. Apparently, in Isaac's world, it's theological condemnation for Israel, sociological explanations for the Palestinians. Brown's direct challenge to Palestinian Christians highlighted this troubling double standard. And so Michael Brown did Christians throughout the world a great service by highlighting the inability of Palestinian Christians to speak truth to power in Palestinian society. Hopefully, conference organizers will take Brown's message to heart in the days ahead. That's my hope as well. Again, it's disconcerting to be asked to bring a message, then to bring the message, and then to be told I'm tired of hearing the same things over and over and over and over. That's disconcerting. If I'm being asked to come and bring a particular position, it's disconcerting to then say we're tired of hearing this position. Nonetheless, I know that my words did not fall on deaf ears. And I will personally continue to challenge Dr. Isaac about his response. Because they asked me to come and challenge them, and I will continue to challenge them. And in my last day here, by God's grace, I will challenge them. And I've challenged them in writing while here, and I will challenge them in writing once I leave, and I will ask them to continue to challenge me, to continue to call me to account, to continue to challenge me if they feel I'm being misfair or I'm misfair. I'm being unfair. I'm misrepresenting them in some way. I will ask them to continue to challenge me where I have a blind spot, where I am insensitive. Keep challenging me, and I'm going to keep challenging you, and then let's both get on our faces before God, and let's both ask God, Father, help us to have your heart. Help us to have your heart for Israel. Help us to have your heart for the Palestinians. Help us to have your heart for the Muslim world, for the Jewish world. Help us to have your heart for every people group in the world. God, where we have blind spots, where we have misconceptions, where we have wrong preconceptions, help us. Help us. I was interacting some years ago with a black pastor, and I've got some dear friends, bosom buddies, that are black pastors, one of whom jokes with me that, you know, we just must have had a different mother or a different father. I mean, we couldn't look more different. So, I mean, that's his joke, because we share so much in common. But I don't have lots and lots and lots of good friends who are black pastors, okay? I have more friends who are white pastors. So I was talking to this black pastor, and he had reacted to something and negatively. He got things wrong. I mean, he apologized later, years ago, just like I've had to apologize for things. All right? I apologized yesterday. That's the most recent time I apologized, right? So it's very current for me. So he ended up apologizing, but he challenged me. And he said, oh, yeah, I'm sure all your best friends are black. In other words, oh, yeah, I've heard that over and over. You just are being insensitive and you don't get it. And now, in this case, he was wrong. But I take the challenge. I take the challenge because I don't live in your world. You don't live in my world. So let's commit. Let's speak the truth to one another in love. Let's do it with tears. Let's do it with passion. Let's do it with compassion. And then let's take those words and go back and get on our faces and say, God, show me what I'm missing. Show them what they're missing. That we together can have your heart. That's what we're trying to do right here on the Line of Fire. Back with you tomorrow.